Both of these men are egotistical maniacs. Everybody knows that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Your Favorite Fight. I'm your host, David Golden. Finally back at it after an extended break. I apologize for the delay in content, but to be perfectly honest, you know, life is busy and I've had a lot on my mind, especially with regard to being a sports journalist and how it's impacting my life. I'll be totally honest with you guys. I've thought a lot over the last 6 months or so about stepping away from writing about this sport. For me, it's been a really rewarding last few years, but I've put a lot of myself into this and the return has been minimal. You know, emotionally, it's been great because I've made a lot of wonderful connections and I've met a lot of wonderful people. But you know, in terms of how much of my physical time I'm putting into it, it's very trying, and it's been really hard. And you know, if I'm being totally honest, it's just something I've been thinking a lot about, and it's kind of unfair of me to put out a podcast if my heart's not really into it. I would say more than anything, it's not the podcast, it's the writing. And you know, it's hard for me, man. I mean, I spend a lot of time, as a lot of you know, calling fighters and, hitting you guys up on Twitter and Facebook and talking to you at shows. And, you know, it's a lot of work. And quite honestly, it's hard for me to have the time when I work a full-time job. I have another podcast. I have a lot going on. You know, I'm married. I have responsibilities, and it's a challenge when it comes right down to it. You know, I want to put more of myself into what I'm doing than I'm able to. And it's been really hard. I guess I'm repeating myself a little bit, but because of that, I've taken a little bit of a break. And you know, it's challenging to stay genuinely interested in a sport when it starts to feel like a job. But if that job has no return, then what's the benefit other than the connections I'm making with people in the sport and in this industry? You know, I've been very fortunate to make some good friends, and all of you guys are awesome. You know, everyone I've met along the way who I would consider someone a friend. You know, like Jake Smith, that's my boy. He knows it. You know, Sunshine, you're my dog. You know, Brian Neuro, you're one of the realest dudes in the sport. You really, you represent, you get it out, you put it out all on the line every time, and you're very passionate about it. Another guy like Ben Egli, like, just to see the amount of love he has for jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts, it's something that honestly got me kind of inspired to push myself further, because I see how he does it, and that makes me inspired. That's why Ben was the first guest on this podcast, because I know he loves the sport and I know he loves what he's doing. You know, so all these guys, I mean, there's so many more, Tyree and, you know, just all you guys, Kevin Keeney, Heather, all of you have been really tremendous. And so it's, it's hard for me to want to say, hey, I think I need to back away. And I'm not going to do that right now. I'm still going to continue on this journey for a little while longer until I really feel like I've made the impact that I was supposed to make, or I left the mark that I feel like I should have made. I don't know, maybe I'm not quite there yet, but, or maybe I am, but right now I'm not sure. To be totally honest, it's challenging. You know, there's some days where I feel like $1 million and other days where I feel like 2 cents, you know, like, there's promoters who give me a hard time, who give me some shit for not doing stories that are, pushing the envelope or whatever, but that's not what I'm here to do. You know, that's not what I enjoy doing. I like telling your stories. You know, one of the most enjoyable things I ever did was write a story on a fighter who's loved in this community. it was huge for me. And that's Michael Collazo. And he was really willing to sit down and open up to me. And if you've read the article I wrote on Michael, it was, he was very forthcoming. He was honest, and he allowed me to tell this story. And it was a few weeks later, I was at breakfast, and he was there with his family, and they, you know, he said, "What's up?" to me, and they left. We just happened to be eating at the same place, 'cause we live in the same town. And, you know, one of his family members came back in, and they thanked me for writing that article. And, you know, it's things like that make me want to keep doing it. It's not, you know, it's not these people who come up behind me and say stupid things like, "Oh, well, you know, you're really over there sucking the dick of those guys at Gracie Baja." Well, you know what, man? Gracie Baja is the biggest gym in this state. Like it or not, they are. They have all the talent. They have people going there. Paige Van Zandt's there. Austin Vanderford's there. Jake Smith is there. You know, Sunshine Williams is there. Fucking Ricky Simone is there. You know, all of these people, and Chael Sonnen. Chael is there. You know what I mean? Fabiano Scherner is there. These guys are super important to the Pacific Northwest, and especially to Oregon. You know, so of course I'm going to heavily favor that gym. I mean, it makes sense. You know, there's a few guys coming out of like Impact Jiu-Jitsu that are really talented guys. DJ Nuttall, like, you know, there's guys like that, and they're really good. Or Ben Egli, you know, he's one of these guys that does it his own way. I wrote a story about Ben and about how he did things his own way, and it was one of the best things I've ever written. Probably my most read article, quite honestly, you know. And it's like that's the kind of stuff that makes me super passionate, and that's what makes me want to podcast, and that's what makes me want to write. So, you know, like I go back and I look at that stuff and I want to keep doing it. But when I think about the things that I'm passionate about right now, you know, mixed martial arts, you know, watching the sport is not really what's getting me motivated as much as it used to. And maybe that's because the negativity that I see so much, you know, or maybe it's the promotion of people who don't necessarily need to be there yet. You know, there's a guy on the main card of UFC 220 who doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. Like, if you're on the main card of a UFC pay-per-view and you don't have a Wikipedia page, something is wrong with that picture. There is definitely someone who could step in and fill that role. I'm not saying this guy doesn't deserve to be where he's at, but how are you putting a guy who has like much lower credentials on the pay-per-view portion of a card with people who are on the fight pass prelims that are like 15 fight UFC veterans? I just like it blows my mind. You know, and so I'm a little bit torn. You know, this is really me speaking from the heart. And, you know, I hope you guys are listening. I hope nobody's turning it off because they're like, "Man, this is stupid. We don't want to hear this guy whine about his life and how he's feeling." But it's not just about me. It's about the sport, you know, and I, you know, I've loved it for a long time. And so to see things happen that like get under my skin so easily, that doesn't make it enjoyable for me. So on Sunday, Paige Van Zandt had a fight at the last UFC fight night. As everyone knows, she lost that fight by decision. And in that loss, she broke her arm. She kept fighting, you know, she finished the fight. And it's weird to me, like there's all this criticism coming out about how, "Oh, I can't believe her coaches let her fight with a broken arm," or, you know, "Oh, you know, why did she move up in weight? Look at her, she's outmatched, blah blah blah." Well, like, go back and watch that fight and look at the intricacies of that fight, and no, she's not outmatched. You know, she got put in a bad position, and I wrote an article prior to that fight and said the one thing she needed to look out for was the size advantage of her opponent, Jessica Rose Clark, and that's kind of what did her in, right? Like she goes for a hip toss, which is a which is not necessarily the greatest thing you could do when your opponent is much larger than you, because they're going to be more likely to counter that position. That's what happened. Jessica Rose Clark got on top of her. She was heavy. It was hard for Paige to get out from under that position. And you know, that's kind of the story of the fight, right? And then in the second round, she breaks her arm and she gets controlled again from the, you know, on the ground, gets put in a triangle attempt. And, you know, she couldn't quite defend the way she was supposed to because her arm was broken, you know. But in the moments where she was fighting her fight, she was doing very well. And it's interesting. I saw a guy online. I'm not going to name his name. I had to unfollow him because the criticism he gave of Paige's performance was so completely wrong. You know, like he was critical of her decision to try to play a game striking from the outside. And he was mentioning that her footwork was not the type of footwork that would benefit her in this type of fight. Well, go look at the third round, man. Like clearly her footwork was the thing that won her that round. It was her athleticism, her footwork. Go back and watch her fight before this. You know, Paige stays on her toes better than most fighters who just plod forward flat footed. You know, she's a very talented young lady, but people forget she's 23 years old. And not to mention going into this fight, she's 7-3. You know who else is 7-3? Rose Namajunas. Like people act like 7-3 is like a shitty record. You know, 7-3 is a good record, you know, and now she's 4-3. It's just absurd to me that someone who's 4-3 in the UFC is getting like a ton of criticism. A 23-year-old kid is getting a ton of criticism who just moved up a weight class, has fought like top 10 opponents across the board. You know, she's got a tremendous win over a couple really good, she got tremendous wins over a couple really good fighters, and it's almost like people believe it was luck. Now, I understand that people don't like the way Paige was pushed into the spotlight, and people don't like the way that Dana White was like in love with the idea of Paige VanZant. Like, I understand that. And I've said for a long time, the UFC really fucked up in the way they brought her up. You know, they should have brought her up more slowly. They saw that they had a talented fighter. You know, they could have moved her along a little more slowly. But because the division was new, she jumped up in the rankings. And lo and behold, she gets put in a fight against someone that she's not ready to fight yet. And, you know, matchmakers knew that was the case, you know, and if the UFC didn't see that, or they thought, oh, this is a good idea, like, man, really? Did you really think that was a good idea? Or did you think it would sell tickets for that night? You know, that's not how you're going to build a fighter who's going to last a long time in your promotion. You know, it's not like GSP walked into the UFC and was like, oh man, I got to get all the hardest fights. I mean, some of his early fights were against guys that had no business being in there with him, but they needed to build GSP up. And the first time they threw him into the fire, guess what happened? He got submitted by Matt Hughes. Matt Hughes, a guy who GSP and, you know, unequivocally should beat every single time. You know, GSP was a far superior athlete to Matt Hughes, but Matt Hughes had veteran savvy. GSP wasn't ready for that. He wasn't ready for the moment, and he folded. Next thing you know, that's the best thing that happened to him. He turns around, he comes back, he's champion, blah, blah, blah. You guys know the story. But, like, that's how you build up a fighter, you know? Like that's how you do it. And it's not fair for people to say, oh, you know, Paige VanZant is this publicity machine. Like, yeah, man, like a little bit, but that's kind of who she's been told she needs to be. You know, she's got the Metro PCS thing. She's got Dancing with the Stars. You know, she gets a lot of attention. How would you react? I mean, think about the way Jon Jones handled the spotlight, you know, the most supremely gifted fighter we've ever seen. And this guy has made wrong move after wrong move after wrong move after wrong move. You know, but he gets a pass because he's really good at fighting, You know, I mean, he doesn't entirely get a pass because right now he doesn't have a belt, right? He gets stripped of the title. You know, now there's there's Daniel Cormier who's left to be a champion who has not been able to best the one guy who's, you know, who's always going to be there in the back of his mind, you know, but outside of John Jones, he's the best in the world. But, you know, we look at John Jones and we continue to give him support and attention. And I get it. He hasn't been proven guilty of anything, but he has been proven guilty of making super terrible decisions. And, you know, that's just the bottom line. I mean, there's no way around that. So I look at Paige VanZant and I think to myself, boy, she's super talented. She has a lot of great tools, you know, but she is, you know, she's been forced to put herself in a position that isn't necessarily the best position for her. And then this fight last weekend, she very well could have won that fight. If, you know, if not for the injury, you know, even in the third round, she wins the third round without a right hand. She's not throwing combinations, and the combinations she threw were, you know, were landing, were looking proper. And it's, you know, it's interesting to think of what would have happened had she stayed healthy in that fight, or if she didn't go for that hip toss, or, you know, if she did keep that fight, you know, at distance instead of clinching in a couple instances where she clinched. And, you know, who knows, you know, who knows where it goes from here for her. Obviously, she has a long road to recovery, and you could see the disappointment in her face after the end of that fight. You know, she grabbed her arm in pain, but the first thing I noticed was her, after she grabbed her arm in pain, she really looked like she was going to cry. And I felt for her, you know, because now that I have a close relationship with a lot of fighters, I have more empathy for people who get injured, because I've seen people get injured and it sucks. You know, it really does, especially when you're coming off of a long delay like Paige was. You know, she's finally found a camp that she's happy with. She has a boyfriend who she loves and seems like everything's going really well for her. And then boom, she gets the return trip to the octagon. She gets a fight against a top 10 opponent and someone who it seems like she should be able to beat. And boom, she loses. She breaks her arm. You know, that's a rough fall for her, but I have no doubt in my mind that she'll be back, and she'll be back better than ever. You know, she's a hard worker. I don't hear a bad word about her from anyone at Gracie Baja. You know, I think early on when she got there, some people didn't quite know what to think. I did have conversations with a few people who weren't sure how she was gelling with the team. But as time went on, you just hear people support her, and you see the way they respect what she's doing, and you understand, wow, you know, she's earning her spot on that team. It's not like she just walks into the gym and boom, I'm the superstar here at the gym. No, man, she's earning her way there. She's earning the respect of her teammates just like anyone else would. And I think that's tremendous. You know, you know, there's a lot of really talented people that walk into a gym and they, you know, when they're coming in and they're one of the big stars in the sport, they feel like they're going to run the show. That happens far too often. And if there's two fighters who are in a gym and there's this dominance issue where you have two people butting heads or they don't see eye to eye, I mean, it's going to happen all the time, every gym. I mean, it happens everywhere. It happens in Portland. It happens, you know, it just happens everywhere. I mean, that's the type of sport you're in. So of course that's going to be the case, and not everyone's going to like each other, you know, but when you get in there and you do the work, even if you don't get along, you're going to respect the other person because you see them working hard. And, you know, that takes dedication, and you know what they're going through, right? Like, if you're in the gym, you have that. So I think it's relatable. But I guess that's my take on Paige and her performance last weekend. I just want to wish Paige a speedy recovery, and I'm sure she'll be back better than ever. So big ups, Paige. Hope to see you back soon, and may you recover swiftly. Moving on, we're going to go ahead and take a look at this Saturday's Bellator 192 card. The reason we're going to look at this next is because, of course, that card features Oregon's own Chael Sonnen the American Gangster, showing up in the first round of the heavyweight Grand Prix against Quentin Rampage Jackson. The Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix is a very interesting tournament. It's not necessarily your top heavyweight performers. Actually, the majority of this tournament is made up of guys who you might not necessarily consider heavyweights. Ryan Bader is one of the participants. Quentin Rampage Jackson, King Mo Lawal, and Chael Sonnen are all taking part, as well as Fedor Emelianenko. While Fedor is generally regarded as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, heavyweight mixed martial artist of all time, he was... Fedor walked into the cage at 220 pounds, a little bit doughy, and probably would have been better served fighting at 205 pounds. I guess me saying that is kind of stupid when you consider that he was, you know, this dominant heavyweight in Pride back in the day. But I still look at him and I just can't imagine him competing today against the, you know, the big guys in the UFC, you know, Stipe Miocic, Francis Ngannou, Junior Dos Santos, guys like that. Those guys are so big. Alistair Overeem. I mean, they're so massive. I mean, it doesn't mean that Fedor in his prime wouldn't have had, you know, every one of their numbers. Who knows? Probably. But still, I look at him and I don't think, boy, now there's a heavyweight. But as far as heavyweights go, they do have Matt Mitrione, Roy Nelson, and Frank Mir also participating in this Grand Prix tournament. This is the first round, however, and you're gonna see two pioneers of the sport, great veterans. Between them, they have nearly 100 fights. You know, there's a lot of experience in that cage when they get in there this weekend, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. The lead up to this fight has been really fun. If you haven't been following Chael on social media or Rampage on social media, you're really missing out. Chael, a little more than Rampage, has been incredibly vocal about his plans for this fight, and you know, he has been willing to challenge people who question his ability to knock people out. You know, he's invited the media to come to Oregon and step in the gym with him and see if his punching power is as good as he says it is. I'm sure that getting punched in the face by Chael is not something that's super fun, but you know, getting punched in the face by anyone isn't amazing. For those of you who have been punched in the face, you know, it sucks. I know it sucks, but let's be real. Chael is not known for his punching power. Of all of Chael's fights, I think he has like 46. Let me look here. Chael has 46 total fights, 30 wins. And of those 30 wins, 5 of them come by submission, 7 by knockout, 18 by decision. You know, Chael is going to get in there and dominate you. That's kind of his thing. You know, he's an aggressive wrestler. He is just infamously hard to get off the top of you. His top game is incredible. His control is phenomenal. I mean, people really do have a hard time getting away from him once he gets on top of them. So his submission game is okay. As of late, it's something he's worked on, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him in this fight get Rampage down and go for a submission. Rampage is not known to have like this incredible submission defense. You know, he's even though he has only 2 losses by submission, that's not really his thing. You know, he's more than likely in his losses going to be by decision, but that's been because a lot of his fights have been favorable matchups against strikers. For Rampage, obviously he's going into this fight looking to knock Chael out. You know, he has 16 wins by knockout, 14 by decision. You know, and you're talking about a guy with nearly 50 fights. So, you know, he knows what he's trying to do. I mean, realistically, everyone knows what's happening in this fight. Chael wants to get this fight on the ground. Rampage wants to keep it on the feet. You know, who will prevail? Well, that'll be, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, Chael does have a good jab, and he has certainly been working on his striking. You know, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes in this fight, how long he keeps it on the feet. Obviously, he's not going to just go in there and just try to shoot without setting anything up. You know, that, I mean, he doesn't need to get in there and try to just show dominance in wrestling without a setup. That's stupid, you know. Like we're talking about two guys who are up there in age, and you know, when your athleticism starts to give a little bit, you know, Rampage is 39, Chael's 40, they're not going to have the speed that they once had, and you know, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting, because what we're really looking at is who are they going to match up with down the line, and who has a better chance moving forward in the tournament. I think realistically, even though Chael is the smaller guy, he's probably bulked up a little bit, you know, and he doesn't have to worry about cutting weight here. So that's good for him. Even though, you know, we all know Chael is turning himself into a bit of a guru with his four pack revolution and the book he has out. There's something to that, but I think he's probably bulked up a little bit. I haven't had a chance to see him in the gym as I have in the past. It'll be fun to see how he shows up for this fight. But going forward, his wrestling is really going to be a key to him making it further on in this tournament. I mean, there are only two people in this tournament who have a chance, I think, at out wrestling Chael, and you know, it's questionable if King Mo is going to out wrestle Chael or not. I mean, they're really kind of on a level playing field, I believe, in that in that world. But Ryan Bader is a very good wrestler, and he is a true he's not a true heavyweight, but he's a big ass dude. I mean, fighting at 205 for a long time. You look at him, you stand next to him, he's a big guy, man. He's going to be big in there. He's strong, he's fast, he's younger than Chael, and I think that might pose a little bit of a challenge for him. However, you know, you get Ryan Bader on his back, maybe it's a different fight, and I wouldn't be surprised there. But I think Chael out wrestles Frank Mir, Chael out wrestles Fedor, Chael out wrestles Matt Mitrione, you know, so it'll be interesting. People don't give Chael a huge chance in this tournament, but you know, I'm not just trying to be like the Oregon Homer here. I think realistically, we're looking at a weird field of competitors, and there's totally a chance Chael could win. I mean, it's you know, it's not unreasonable to think that, you know, Roy Nelson, big ups to Roy Nelson for everything he's done in the sport, but homeboy is not in as good a shape as Chael Sonnen. He's not in as good a shape as most people in this tournament. And I know people talk about how, oh, he's got cardio and he's got a chin and this and that. Yeah, man. But like, you can have all of that, but let's be real. Dude has plenty of extra pounds that he doesn't need. And those are not going to help him, you know. And you know, yes, he has a good submission game, but you know, like you're not going to have as good an opportunity if you're exhausted from fighting off takedowns from a guy like Chael Sonnen or a guy like Ryan Bader, you know, or if you're taking pot shots from a guy like Matt Mitrione, who's going to be way more athletic than you. So it'll be interesting. It'll be really interesting to see what happens going forward, but this Saturday it's Chael and Rampage, and you know, I think this is kind of a coin flip. If I had to bet, I would say Chael's going to take it, only because Rampage has proven to be a little one dimensional in his old age. He doesn't throw a lot of kicks. He doesn't try to mix in a lot of takedowns. You know, he has in the past shown he has good takedown defense, but you know, we'll see. I mean, at 39 years old and, you know, like 260 pounds, you know, might be a different guy. So, I think Chael is probably a little bit more motivated and in better shape. And, you know, if I'm betting, I'm betting on Sonnen for this one. You know, that's not going to win you a giant pile of cash or anything, but hey man, you know, you bet enough money, you know, scared money don't make money. Put it out there if you want to win. But, yeah, that'll be an interesting fight. But more interesting than that, on that card, you have a fight between two incredibly talented welterweight fighters in Douglas Lima and Rory McDonald. Douglas Lima, I would say, does not get the credit he deserves because he spent his career in Bellator, and he is lesser known to people who are UFC fans, and that's a little bit unfair, as we've seen with recent acquisitions in Bellator from the UFC, guys like Ben Askren, really great fighters like Gegard Mousasi, they've had a hard time going over to the UFC or going over to Bellator rather. It hasn't worked out quite as smoothly as they had hoped, in Ben's case. Haha. But, you know, a guy like Douglas Lima really does have an incredible record. He beat Lawrence Larkin, who came over from the UFC. He beat Andrei Koroshkov, who beat Ben Henderson. He's got a win over Paul Daly. He's got a win over Ben Saunders, a UFC veteran, actually two wins over Ben Saunders. He has a fight against Ben Askren. He lost that fight, but you know, Ben Askren never lost to anyone. Probably the best fighter to never fight in the UFC. I still dream that someone will pony up some money and bring him in. You never know. You know, he's got a win over a very tough Canadian fighter, Ryan Ford. He really has fought a lot of really talented guys. It's just not a list of people that you may be super familiar with. And, you know, that's unfortunate. But if I go down his last like 10 fights, it's knockout, TKO, head kick, KO, TKO, TKO. You know, I mean, man, the guy's got power. He finishes fights. He's very underrated. And I think in this fight, he's not necessarily getting the credit he deserves. At 30 years old, he's probably reaching the peak of his athletic prime. He's not going to be, you know, he's going to have another 2, maybe 3 years where he can continue to be as dominant as he is. He has a very good jiu-jitsu background, but his striking is really what does the trick for him. He and his brother, Diego Lima, they have a jiu-jitsu school. They're both black belts. You know, he's not worried about going to the ground against a guy like Rory McDonald, even though Rory McDonald is one hell of a wrestler. His jiu-jitsu is also black belt level, but I hesitate to say they're the same level black belt, only because, you know, I haven't seen a lot of competition from Rory in the jiu-jitsu world. It doesn't mean it's not out there. I haven't seen it personally. But the thing about Rory is he is weird. And I don't mean that in the sense that he's a weird fighter, like he's got a weird style. No, I just mean he's weird. Like he's a little bit creepy. He has been given the moniker the Canadian Psycho. He does not like that, much in the way Robert Whittaker does not like the nickname Bobby Knuckles. I think Rory probably dislikes the Canadian Psycho a little bit worse. But if you go on to Bellator.com and you watch this short little interview they did with him leading up to this fight, man, it is creepy. It's a sit down with Rory McDonald, and he You know, the way he looks at the camera and the way he talks about what he wants to do in this fight, you're like, man, this dude really does want to get in there and just destroy this guy in the weirdest way. It's you know, it's a little bit uncomfortable, but like in a really fun way, because he doesn't see it, so that's always fun. But he does say something in this interview on the Bellator site. It's called a Sit Down with Rory McDonald. It's only a minute long. If you get a chance, watch it. It's worth checking out because it's, like I said, it's weird. But he does say something that I thought was really interesting, and he's giving compliments to the people in Bellator, saying that they're great fighters and they're A-level fighters, but he is an A-plus level fighter. I hesitate to say that he is an A-plus level fighter, because he does have, like, in his last three fights, he does have two losses. You know, he lost the decision to Steven Wonderboy Thompson. He has a brutal TKO against Robbie Lawler. Although it was like that, the fight against Robbie Lawler at UFC 189 might be one of my, man, it's probably in my top three favorite fights of all time. It was really intense. That fight was incredible. And actually the first fight against Robbie Lawler at UFC 167 was pretty good too. But again, he lost to Robbie Lawler. So I look back at his career and I you know, aside from the close loss to Carlos Condit, it's those two losses to Robbie Lawler and that loss to Steven Thompson where I kind of like, I look at Rory and I think, is he as good as people believe he is? Or is he as good as he believes he is? I mean, he certainly is a more dominant fighter than Paul Daly. He showed that. And, you know, he made Paul Daly look like he did not belong in the cage with him. And I will say Paul Daly and Douglas Lima had a much closer fight. But everybody knows that the transitive property does not exist in MMA. I mean, it's just not the way it works. So I'll be interested to see how this plays out. I don't think it's going to be as easy a fight as Rory may believe that it's going to be. But man, it is an excellent fight and a fight that you can see for free. Like, it's incredible. Quite honestly, it's unfortunate that this fight is happening the same night as UFC 220, because I think all eyes will be on UFC 220 since you have the UFC heavyweight title on the line. And it's a matchup that people are just clamoring to see, because the champion, Stipe Miocic, is if he can defend this title, he'll do something no one has ever done. And, you know, he'll be the first person to defend the UFC heavyweight title three times in a row. That's kind of uncharted water. He's, you know, he has the skills to do it. I think people are kind of, people look at him and maybe they're a little underwhelmed by a couple of his performances. But like, if you look back at his last four fights, you're talking about four knockouts in the first round of those fights, even though, like, for some reason, myself included, I look at the Alistair Overeem fight and I'm like, man, like it, that, like, even though he gets the win, there are some moments in that fight where Alistair looked like he was about ready to get in there and get things going his way. But boy, Stipe really has fought some high level opponents. You know, he's fought Junior Dos Santos twice. He's fought Gabriel Gonzaga. He's fought Roy Nelson. You know, he's got wins over Andre Arlovsky, Fabricio Verdum, Alistair Overeem. You know, he's really got a good resume to go into the cage with. But he's going up against a guy that people are just in love with, and that's Francis Ngannou. The world kind of fell in love with Francis Ngannou after his most recent win at UFC 218, when he knocked Alistair Overeem into like another dimension. It was an incredibly hard punch. It didn't even land flush, and it made Alistair Overeem look like he was Like it was surprising that he got up and did quite as well as he did at getting up and getting out of the cage. Cause man, that was a violent knockout. But the problem is there's a very small sample size against high level opponents. You know, Francis Ngannou's biggest, maybe most talented opponent outside of Alistair Overeem is Curtis Blaydes, most likely. And Curtis Blaydes, while he is a very talented guy, you're talking about a dude with 9 fights who hasn't really fought that many incredible people. And his even though he has a solid record of 8-1-1, he's still one of these guys that people are kind of waiting to see, you know, what is he going to bring to the table. But with that being said, Ngannou does have a win over Alistair Overeem, and he did knock out Andrei Arlovsky. But really, like, if you're a heavyweight and you're going in there against Andrei Arlovsky, if you have any kind of chin at all, the likelihood is you're going to knock Arlovsky out. Andrei Arlovsky gets knocked out easily. I mean, that's just the unfortunate truth. His jaw is just, he just doesn't have it, you know. In the past, maybe he was able to take a punch a little better, but I mean, even going back to his fights with Tim Sylvia, Arlovsky did not take a punch incredibly well, even though that was when he was at his most dominant. So, you know, realistically, you know, Ngannou has, you know, 3 or 4 fights that are impressive, but he is really taking a huge step up in competition against Stipe. That being said, if Francis lands a punch against Stipe the way he did against Overeem, I mean, it'll certainly knock Stipe out. I don't doubt it. But Stipe has a way better chin than Alistair Overeem. I mean, Alistair Overeem has been knocked out like damn near 15 times. And it's, and some of his knockouts were not against guys the size of Ngannou, you know. I mean, he's had kickboxing fights where he's been knocked out against some smaller guys. You know, he got taken out pretty aggressively by Badr Hari, who, while he is a large dude, he's not 6'4", 260 pounds of like superhero-esque stature, you know? So it'll be interesting to see, just how well the power of Ngannou transfers when he goes against a guy like Stipe, who does have a pretty good chin, who's taken some really hard shots, but has proven that he can withstand adversity and you know, get in there and get the job done against top level opponents. You know, I'm not sure what the odds are for this fight. I haven't looked it up. You know, it's hard for me to say I would bet against Stipe, even though it seems like the cool vote would be with Ngannou. Like, people are really jumping on that boat, and nothing wrong with that. He's a freaky athletic specimen. But you know, there have been plenty of really incredible athletic specimens who just didn't pan out, you know, and in the fight game, and some guys who were not, you know, you look at them and you getting off the bus, you're like, oh, that guy's not going to be the baddest dude on the planet. But, you know, they are, you know. Cain Velasquez, I mean, you know, an incredible talent. And if not for some trouble with injury, you know, he could still be in the discussion for, you know, potentially being one of the guys who'd be fighting for a title right now, if not already having the UFC heavyweight title around his waist. It's a division that finally has some life in it after years of kind of being like just so. It's really cool to see what Stipe has done for the heavyweight division. People outside of Cleveland, I don't think they realize how important Stipe is to that city. He's just a superstar there. So it's cool to see what he means to them. And then kind of this weird dichotomy where the average person probably doesn't even know who he is. You know, I say this a lot. You know, if you ask people if you just ask a random person on the street if they know who Ronda Rousey is, I would bet you $50 that at least half of them would say, oh, she's a UFC champion, right? And you know, obviously fight fans would laugh at that because we know, you know, the saga of Ronda Rousey and what's happened to her. And this week she actually signed a deal with the WWE. So she's going to become a professional wrestler, which I think is cool for her. She's probably pretty well suited for that, even though she is not the most charismatic person on a microphone. So she better be really good in the ring. I guess Brock Lesnar had a little bit of that too. He wasn't, he's never been that great on a microphone in the world of wrestling. So, you know, but he was a huge star. So, hey, Ronda Rousey would probably do it too. I mean, she's already a well-known name, a huge product. So we'll see what happens and, you know, how that works out for her. But as far as Stipe goes, you know, he's not a household name, but he's the baddest man on the planet right now. And, if he beats Francis Ngannou this Saturday, that's rarefied air, and you're left to kind of look around that division and be like, hey, who's next? I know Cain Velasquez came out this week and took a little photo at the, UFC Performance Institute and, with the caption, "Don't call it a comeback." Well, I'm a huge Cain Velasquez fan, but I'll tell you what, I am not calling it a comeback, Cain. You know why? Because you have not proven that you are back yet. You've been injured way too much. I have been on the Cain Velasquez bandwagon in the past, and I don't think I'm going to get back on until you have at least two fights in a row. Until you can fight twice in a year, I can't jump back on, man. Like, I'll definitely keep my eye on you, and I'll help push if you guys stall. But man, I'm not jumping on that wagon just yet, buddy. But hey, I wouldn't mind watching Stipe fight Cain Velasquez. That'd be a fun fight to see. But really, outside of that, there's not a lot going on in the heavyweight division. So if he takes out Ngannou, it'll be really interesting to see what happens for Stipe and for that division moving forward. But goddamn, he will definitely become a highly talked about person in the world of mixed martial arts more than he is now. I think he'll land a little spot over there on the couch at ESPN. He'll be getting interviewed a little bit more, and we'll see what happens. And Cleveland will definitely put up a banner or something. I don't doubt it. So but that's a huge fight, and something that if this Saturday you don't have plans just yet, or you're not sure what to watch, that's one fight that I wouldn't want to miss personally. Outside of that, you have a few other good fights on that card, including Daniel Cormier making his first title defense since being reinstated as the UFC light heavyweight champion. You know, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Does he have what it takes to emotionally get back in there after the whole incident with John Jones and the devastating knockout, the crying in the cage, the whole thing? You know, he took a lot of heat after that, and I know that some of you who are listening, especially Heather Standing, I know you're not a huge Daniel Cormier fan. So I get it. Like, I get the hate a little bit, but man, when John Jones isn't there, he's the number one guy at 205 pounds. And you can make the towel joke all you want and whatever, but you know, everybody's done a little bit of dirt here and there. You know, I'm not trying to make an excuse for him. I don't think it's excusable what he did with cheating on the weigh-ins with the towel and all, but you know, that's the breaks. That's in the past. I mean, you give John Jones a break for doing all sorts of stupid shit. Let's give DC a break on that one. But, you know, moving forward, it'll be interesting to see how he performs. I'm certainly not quite as excited about seeing him fight as I was in the past. I'm still team DC because I mean, I think he's a very likable dude. You know, I gravitate towards guys who have that kind of personality. I don't know, just like I like watching Chael in there. I like DC as he's kind of taken on this role as a bad guy a little bit. It's kind of fun to me. But that'll be an interesting fight and definitely something to watch. That's it for this weekend. For all of you local fight fans who might be listening, or people who are trying to, trying to discover the next big thing or the next up and coming fighter out of the Northwest or in Bellator. Next weekend on January 26th, we have two fighters coming out of the Gracie Baja fight camp who are going to be making their Bellator debuts. And those two guys are Jake Smith and Tyree Fortune. Anybody who listens to this podcast or is familiar with the podcast knows who Jake Smith is. He's been on a whole bunch of times. Jake Smith, the Half Black Attack, good friend of the podcast, good buddy of mine. He is going in there at Bellator 193 on January 26th down in California. And he's going to be taking a step up in competition. Guys making their Bellator debut, when you're a prospect, a lot of times, they kind of put you in there against maybe a lesser known dude. But, in Jake's case, he's going in there against a guy who has fought for Bellator like four times. He's fought for World Series of Fighting. He's pretty well established, 8-1 professional, and all eight of his wins come by way of finish. He's got 7 TKOs or KOs and 1 submission to his credit. So this is definitely the type of fight Jake's looking for. So he's going to be fighting a guy named Steve Cazzola. So this is really a fight that is right up Jake's alley. Anybody who knows Jake knows he likes to stand and bang. That's kind of his thing. He's always ready for a war. I think this fight plays nicely into his hands. He's tougher than ever. He looks to be in great shape. If you're a fan of Jake's, he posts a series of videos on YouTube called Triggered Happy with his friend Jake. And you go back and you watch that first one, and then you go back and look at this last one, and you can see the transformation in Jake's face as he's gotten into shape for this fight. He looks lean and mean. He'll be making his debut at 155 pounds. I think he's ready for it. I think that's the right weight class for him. I know the cut's going to be a little bit difficult, and my boy likes to eat. I get it. But this, I think, is going to be big for him because he won't have to worry about being at a size disadvantage. He's going to go in there against a guy who's the same size as him, and they're both going to go in and likely stand up and bang. So that's going to be a great fight. You'll see it online on Bellator.com. It's not going to be on the main card, but you can get that for free on Bellator.com. Stream it on your phone, stream it on your computer. No reason not to watch, because it is free 99, and free 99 is my favorite price. I love supporting guys like Jake, he's family on this podcast. So let's go out there and show him some love. If you're a fan of your favorite fight, please support Jake and watch that fight. In addition to Jake making his Bellator debut, another awesome dude out of Gracie Baja is my man, Tyree Fortune. Tyree's been on the podcast. He's just genuinely one of the nicest guys in the sport. I have told him time and time again, he's one of the realest people in the sport I've ever met. Every time I see him, he says, "What's up?" He makes eye contact, gives me a hug. We talk. He's just a real dude. If you ever get a chance to meet Tyree, he can be a little outspoken, but he's a real guy. I mean, you sit down with him and he's there present with you. He's funny. He's engaging. And, he's just one of the nicest guys you'll meet in the sport. I mean, I say that about a lot of people. Like, fighters are all really nice guys and girls. It's one of those things where in the MMA community, people are just a lot more friendly maybe than the average person would expect. I mean, of course, there's some assholes. There's assholes everywhere. But Tyree's just not one of those guys. He's just a super friendly guy. If you're a fan of Tyree's, he's going to be a fan of yours. He's that kind of person. And Tyree is in the position where at 3-0, they are putting Bellator is putting him up against another 3-0 fighter, an MMA prospect out of California, Michael Quintero. This fight will be interesting. for Tyree because Michael Quintero is a big guy at 205 pounds. It'll be a test in terms of strength just as a whole. He's a very big dude, and I know Tyree has fought guys who are classically very heavily muscled. I've actually seen him fight a guy who was he really looked the part getting off the bus, but that guy was a little bit smaller, and Quintero is he's a big guy, 6'3", every bit of 205 pounds. But I will say, in terms of what I've read about him athletically, he's gonna he may have a little bit of trouble keeping up with the pace that Tyree can set. Tyree is aggressive and has great wrestling. And boy, when he puts his combinations together, it's a very pretty thing to watch. And he has that athletic burst. You know, Tyree is one of those guys who can throw that flying knee at a moment's notice. He just has that ability. So I would look for Tyree to use his athleticism against this really big, strong guy. And, it'll be a fun fight. Hopefully one that Tyree comes out victorious. Again, this will be on that same, Bellator 193, January 26th. So please, you guys, be sure to support those two guys. They are they're two of my favorite people in the Portland fight scene. As I've said in the past, I like to support the fighters who are the future of the sport, because without those fighters, we don't have a future for the sport. So when I see fighters like Lisa Spangler getting ready to turn pro, when I see, fighters like Chris Sunshine Williams make his Bellator debut and have it be successful, or when I see a buddy of mine like Jake get in there and make his Bellator debut, or Tyree, Ricky Simone going to LFA and having this dominant win over Chico Camus, and he's got 1 foot in the door of the UFC at this point. It'll be wonderful to see these guys make it there. Recently Ben Egli signed with a great management team, and I expect to see big things from him in the near future. So it's going to be cool, but next weekend, Bellator 193, two of our own, Portland, they're going to be out there. So please be sure to represent, jump on Bellator.com, watch these guys fight. It'll be awesome for them. It'll be worth it for you. Victorious or not, it's a great moment for these guys. So let's show them some support. Jump on Facebook, jump on Twitter, let them know you're there to support them. They're great people. They deserve success, and I hope the best for both of them. And they know I'll be waving that flag, come that Friday night. So I think that's going to about do it for this episode of Your Favorite Fight. I'm sorry if the beginning was a little bit whiny or self-serving, but I just wanted you guys to know where I was coming from and how I was feeling. Again, any fighter that wants to come on the podcast and talk, please let me know. You're more than welcome to come on. I would love to talk to you. I got a little studio set up at my house. You guys can come on through. I'm mobile. I can come to you, whatever you want. I'm available. Expect to hear more from some coaches. I do have a couple things lined up for the podcast, and hopefully we'll get those moving, get back to this every other week deal, and get these out there. And like I said, I'm not going to step away just yet. So also expect to see some articles from me. I'll potentially be working with more websites in the future. That's something that I've talked to a couple people about. It's not 100% yet, but we'll see. I'm going to always stay representing Oregon Sports News. Those are the guys that put me on the scene, and they're people that I love. I love what they're doing. you know, please go on OregonSportsNews.com, share those articles, let people know you're reading them. You know, if you're into the Trailblazers, the Mariners, the Seahawks, whatever, you know, if you're into fitness, they got a fitness writer over there. If you're into boxing, we got a couple people that cover boxing as well. You know, please show them some support. And, you know, give me a follow on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at David Golden MMA on Twitter, David Golden MMA on Facebook, Your Favorite Fight on Instagram. I'm also personally on Instagram at Triple Sixer. That's the word triple, number six, and then ER if you want to follow me on there. You know, I post some, you know, regular shit. Anyway, all right, be sure to let people know about Your Favorite Fight. You know, share it with your friends. And I say it all the time, there's a lot of great fights out there. I know it can be hard to pick just one, but think about it. What's your favorite fight?